Welcome to episode 235 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. It is Labor Day weekend here in the U.S. It is Saturday, September 1st, 2012. I am the Solomonster. Hope everybody is having a good holiday weekend, and most people will enjoy a day off from work this Monday. I know I will. I want to mention here at the top of the program that if you have about 40 minutes or so and want to see a freaking awesome, just brutal pro wrestling match, the DDT promotion in Japan recently held their 15th anniversary show the day before SummerSlam, featuring a main event of Kenny Omega against Kota Ibushi. And the little I've seen of Ibushi, he's very impressive. Omega, I've seen wrestle in Ring of Honor before. He was actually at a couple of shows that I was at live a couple of years ago. And how these men can still walk without the assistance of a walker or a wheelchair after seeing this is amazing to me. They took an absolutely sick amount of punishment in this match. I mean, kicks to the head, hurricanranas from the top rope to the floor, for crying out loud, a moonsault off a balcony. I realize that back in the old days of ECW, people like New Jack and such did balcony dives and stuff like this, but this was just something on a different level. And just absolutely insane stuff. But in between all the insane stuff was a stiff, just really well-worked Japanese-style professional wrestling match, and it's worth going out of your way to see. As best as I can tell, there's only one video of it up on YouTube, so if you search, it should come right up. Be aware that the audio is out of sync by about a second or two, which was weird during all the near falls. At first, I thought the referee kept messing up by holding up the count so the guys could kick out at the last possible second, but then I realized it was actually just the audio. But it is the full match, and it's very much different than anything you would see on WWE or TNA television, which is a good thing. Maybe not for their bodies, but it was still an amazing match, so check that out if you've got some time to spare. Monday Night Raw, episode 1005, emanating from Milwaukee, Wisconsin this past week. We had CM Punk and Jerry the King Lawler in a cage, Kane and Daniel Bryan attending anger management classes, Triple H doing a retirement speech, even though nobody believes he's actually retiring, and Zack Ryder actually won a match on Raw. Hell, for that reason alone, this was a newsworthy program. And lots of debate this past week on SE Scoops, on TV Tracks, Facebook, and such, about my commentary on Sound of 234 regarding Jerry Lawler and why I think the King should be dethroned from the Raw announce booth. Lots of people agreeing with my remarks, some people telling me I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, some people even offering another interesting option that I had not considered for a new Raw announce team, that being Josh Matthews and Road Dogg, who do running commentary for the Are You Serious show on WWE's YouTube channel, where they make fun of bad wrestling clips. So really, for that reason alone, they'd probably fit in perfectly on the show. But again, there are many options available for WWE to go with if they wanted to either replace Lawler or do a split team deal where they do half of Raw and maybe somebody else does the other half. Anyway, imagine my surprise when this week Jerry Lawler leaves the announce booth for half the show. I mean, hell, if I knew it was that easy, I'd have wished for $1 million or something. So I found that rather odd. Although I did say we might end up getting a Punk vs. Lawler match this week, and that we did. They opened the show with a promo in the ring. CM Punk really was, he really shined in this segment. Lawler was great too. You know, as I said, he excels at stuff like this, always has. But Punk is just so much better as a douchebag heel. Even when he's saying something that actually does make sense. I mean, the dude is the WWE champion. You know, he does deserve respect. He's absolutely right. But still, what a prick he comes off as. I just love it. So long story short, Lawler ended up accepting his challenge that Punk laid down for a match, and the fans would get to decide the stipulation. And it would either be a tables match, a steel cage match, or a no disqualification match. And given the fact that there was a cage hanging above the ring, I think we kind of knew where this one was headed. So that was the opening segment. I am happy to report now that Ryback's pink eye appears to have subsided. And he had a match with Jack Swagger. Ryback went to give Swagger a back body drop at one point, and I shrieked in terror because Swagger got dropped damn near on his head. Looking back, it looks like he was actually, he actually landed more on his shoulder blade. But still, how do you fuck up a back body drop? I was certain the man was paralyzed. Thankfully, he was not. Ryback won with his move. Swagger just sat at ringside screaming, "That's it! That's it!" So, I presume this is leading to him quitting on TV, which I think would be the best idea for the guy. I think I actually answered this question in the mailbag a couple weeks ago. But I think the only way you can even begin to rehab this man is by getting him off television for a few months and then reintroducing him as a killer. The key is to keep him off TV and out of people's minds for a while so they can forget about this horrible losing streak angle. Because I can't think of very many wrestlers that have actually benefited from doing a losing streak angle. It's the kiss of death. Either that or Swagger's just going to show up next week with a 357 Magnum and splatter his brains all over the first five rows like a watermelon at a Gallagher concert. I don't want to see that happen, and I'm sure neither do the people in those first five rows. Natalya and Layla had a match. I am not a fan of AJ Lee's music, her theme music, especially now that she's the GM, and she comes out wearing a business suit. I don't know. It annoys me. I feel like Psycho Sid's theme music would suit her much better. And then she can blink repeatedly as she skips down to the ring. But anyway, the reason I bring this up is because I have actually found a theme song that annoys me much more than AJ's music does. And that is Layla's music. Never really paid any attention to it before. So, for example, I wasn't aware of the fact that Tiffany actually used it as her theme when she was in WWE, which is not surprising that I wouldn't know that because I never bothered paying any attention to Tiffany when she was on TV. But for whatever reason, I noticed it this week, and I listened to the lyrics. Just Disney Channel, Miley Cyrus-sounding audio poison, this song is. I had to look up the lyrics to this thing. I just had to. So, if you will indulge me for a moment, I'd like to read some of these lyrics to you. These are some of the lyrics to the music of our reigning Divas Champion. "I'm insatiable. I can't get enough. I need to find a boy." What is she, 5 years old? "I need to find a boy," she says. Well, the music says. She doesn't say it herself. So anyway, continues here. "I'm insatiable, I can't get enough. No matter how I try, just can't find my true love. Oh, what you see is what you get, but just because you're looking, don't think you're home yet. Take your time, move slow, it's your best bet. This girl likes some sweet talk before she's all set." What is this, a Brazzers video? "Oh, the way you're looking, your eyes give you away. The way you look me up and down and smile in that way. You're so damn cute, but I've been here before. I know where this is going, so I'm showing you the door. I'm in trouble, because I can't see. The things I really want aren't the things I really need. My heart's all pounding, and I'm weak in my knees. But you can make a girl fall so easily. I'm insatiable. And what I need most is you to wrap your arms around me. Baby, let's go. I'm insatiable. I need to find a boy." Okay, I think we get the point here. This song sucks. I feel better now after getting that off my chest. Speaking of chests, Layla won the match. It's worth noting that to illustrate exactly how little WWE regards its Divas division, they had Vicky Guerrero walk out at the beginning of this match and basically tell the ladies to hurry up and finish their match quickly because she had something important to say. And she then proceeded to stand outside the ring on the steps looking completely bored by what she was watching. I mean, this was almost as bad as when Michael Cole used to interrupt the Divas matches, like when Eve would be wrestling when she was still a babyface, and he would cut a promo on them and call them boring and tell them to get the hell out of the ring. Remember when he used to do that? Well, I do, and I bet a whole lot of other people do, too. And that's precisely why nobody gives a shit about women's wrestling, at least in WWE. And to think, some of you actually thought that when Raw went to 3 hours, that would mean more time for the Divas. But then again, you know, after last week's Battle Royal, maybe I shouldn't be complaining. So Vicky's big announcement was that she was still upset with AJ, forcing Dolph Ziggler to put his Money in the Bank briefcase on the line last week against Chris Jericho. And my only reaction to this was, but he won! Her man won! So what the hell is she complaining about? She begged the board of directors to appoint her as the new GM. AJ came out, she attacked Vicky. The fans actually went nuts for this, probably more than anything else on the entire show. So they were fixing to see a cat fight, these people were, and that's exactly what they got. Throughout the night, they showed video packages memorializing the career of Triple H, teasing whether or not his career was over. They had a video at one point that they referred to as Triple H's Greatest Hits. And I was hoping that it was something like him in studio playing a ukulele or something, but sadly it wasn't. We had three different skits on the show that were taped out in L.A. before SummerSlam, showing Daniel Bryan and Kane taking anger management classes. And these WWE comedy segments tend to be hit or miss. For example, I did like the training video they did years ago with William Regal and Eugene. That's one of my favorites, but God knows we've seen our fair share of crappy ones. But I like these. They were very entertaining, particularly the last one. Daniel Bryan is awesome. I know this is not news to many of you, but he is. You can put him in almost any situation, and he instantly makes it better. The guy in the segment that played Harold, who, by the way, now has his own Twitter account and calls himself Harold Howard. So I guess that'll be the name that he uses if they bring him in. He was Mason Andrews in TNA, who they had brought in to compete in some X Division matches. And I know TNA wanted to sign him, but it looks like WWE may end up getting him. Though maybe not for a while, since he technically just worked for TNA and they've got that lawsuit still going. He was also very good here. The final segment, which is really the main one here that mattered, had Kane explaining his life story to everyone. Which is an impossible task, believe me, I've tried. But he did a good job covering most of the key events. The way they shot this actually reminded me of a scene from Seinfeld where George is, he's competing for an apartment with some old man who once survived a shipwreck. And George makes this big pitch in front of the board members, like the tenants board or whatever it was, and just recounts all of the horrible experiences that he's had in his life. And so anyway, he's talking about each one for so long that they fade out while he's still talking and they move on to the next one. Editing it in this way made it 10 times funnier. And Kane talked about Undertaker burning down his home, burying his brother alive not once but twice, abducting various co-workers, getting married, getting divorced, tombstoning a priest, his unhealthy obsession with torturing Pete Rose, and yes, he mentioned once having a girlfriend named Katie, which didn't turn out too well. And for several hours after the show was over, Katie Vick was trending worldwide on Twitter. I don't know whether to laugh or cry at that one. That still has to be the most horrendous storyline the company has ever done. Has to be. Actually, I don't know what's more horrendous, the storyline itself or the fact that WWE once auctioned off Katie Vick's cheerleader outfit. Yeah, there was a segment back in the day where Triple H was in the ring and he had a mannequin, I think it was, with a cheerleader outfit because I guess Katie Vick in her more youthful days was a cheerleader. And R.D. Reynolds of WrestleCrap actually shelled out a couple of $100 for the Katie Vick cheerleader outfit that they made many years ago. It came with Ziploc baggies stuffed with various articles of clothing, including a bra and 4 pairs of panties, all signed by Triple H. I'm not making this up. WWE actually included a certificate of authenticity with this stuff. I guess because it's important for us to know that this really was worn by the dead girl whose corpse was defiled by Triple H. And the best part about the whole thing, that certificate of authenticity, it was signed by none other than Linda E. McMahon. Now there's something I'm sure the Democrats running against her in Connecticut would love to get their hands on. Well, that and the panties too, probably. Many of these politicians are sick little freaks. You know they are. Anyway, how the hell did I get onto panties and Linda McMahon? I apologize for that mental image. Josh Matthews. Let's move on here. Josh Matthews came out to replace Jerry Lawler on commentary. We had John Cena versus The Miz. in a rematch of the worst WrestleMania main event of all time. I'm sorry, but that match was the drizzling shits back at WrestleMania 27. So, would this match be any better? Well, I mean, you set the bar kind of low. It's almost impossible, I think, for this match not to be better. And it was. Miz got some offense in on Cena, including a beautiful DDT. I love the way Miz executes the DDT. It just always looks brutal. Probably the only thing he does offensively that actually makes him look like a killer. You know how this goes. Cena fights back, hits the AA, gets the pin. He is fighting for the WWE Championship at the next pay-per-view, so that's fine. I just wish they wouldn't put the Intercontinental Champion in matches like this, but what the hell are you going to do? Santino Marella beat Heath Slater in a comedy match. We also had an appearance later by R-Truth, who beat Daniel Bryan by countout. Now, I mentioned these two together for this reason. First, let me say that I hated the end of the Santino match. Just hated it. Was just completely embarrassed by it. I like Santino's comedy. He plays his role perfect. You know, he's very entertaining, and I get that it's all in good fun, it's for the kids, but I can only suspend my disbelief so much. He was about to win the match with the Cobra when they played some sexy music and Oksana walks out onto the stage. And suddenly Santino loses control of his hand, I hate when that happens, and the Cobra became smitten with Oksana. So he wins the match anyway because Heath Slater sucks. And then I guess we're supposed to believe that the Cobra is controlling Santino and he runs to the back after Oksana. I can't imagine why WWE cannot seem to get all of those 18 to 24-year-olds back watching Raw. Just can't figure it out. But okay, fine. It's for the kids. I'll give you that. Okay? No problem. The problem, though, that's not a problem, but the problem is that a few segments later, we've got R-Truth and his imaginary buddy, Little Jimmy. I mean, that's when I realized, maybe I really am too old for this shit. I mean, I'm saying goodbye to my 20s in a month, and I'm watching a show with a guy being controlled by a sleeve on his arm and another guy who talks to an invisible man. Don't they have a wellness policy in this company? Shouldn't there be a mental health component to it? Then again, I was watching the Republican convention and I saw Clint Eastwood talking to an invisible man, too. So, a bunch of crazy people in this world. It's frightening. Team of Brodus Clay and Sin Cara beat Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow after Brodus pinned Cody. Then they brought kids into the ring to dance. Great, more kids crap. If this show is terribly effective at one thing, it's getting me to hate children. By the way, I'm sure you've heard by now that one of the Funkadactyls, Cameron, or Ariane, as you may remember her from the highly successful recent season of Tough Enough, a show where the winner was cut from developmental, as were every single one of the other runner-ups that they signed. Cameron was arrested down in Florida on a DUI charge, not this past Friday, but the Friday before that. And she did everything in her power to cover it up, make sure that WWE did not find out. She refused a breathalyzer test. Her blood alcohol level was clocked at more than twice the legal limit. She allegedly offered one of the police officers $10,000 to keep it quiet because she was afraid she would lose her job. TMZ had contacted WWE, who said that Cameron had not disclosed this to them, which is a big no-no. And they are understandably very upset with her. I have no tolerance for people who drive drunk and the danger they pose to innocent people on the road or on the street, so I have little sympathy for her. In fact, I almost hope they do get rid of her. That way, maybe we'll finally get to see Naomi wrestle instead of just dance. Not that I mind her dancing, believe me, but Naomi is actually a really good wrestler. They just haven't given her a chance to show it. And I think that's one way to turn around the Divas division. Actually start featuring women who know how to wrestle and maybe come up with one or two compelling storylines for them along the lines of what they did with Trish Stratus and Mickie James several years ago. That was the first women's match in forever that I actually could not wait to see. I mean, that was a WrestleMania match that, you know, WrestleMania 22 didn't exactly have a very appealing lineup. I guess he had Edge and Mick Foley, and there wasn't a whole lot else to get excited about, but Trish and Mickie at that year's WrestleMania was probably the number two match or number three match on the card that I was most looking forward to, which I can never say that about a Divas match, just because they're always made out to be less than important, shall we say. So, I think that's one way to certainly get things going with the women. you know, I'm not against women's wrestling. I'm against the way WWE portrays women's wrestling, which is as an afterthought. You know, Awesome Kong and Gail Kim were tearing it up in TNA many years ago, and they were getting more viewers than anything else on Impact at the time. I mean, this is not rocket science. This is not hard to do. Triple H came out to do some acting. Always entertaining. I wanted so badly for the fans in Milwaukee to start chanting, "You tapped out," but they didn't. But I do want to give props to the guy with the HBK was better than you sign in the crowd. That made me laugh so hard. I tip my cap to you, sir. Really, though, let's be honest. You could hold that sign up regardless of who's in the ring, and it would still be true. So Triple H should not feel too bad about that. He talked about his career. He started getting choked up. His eyes got all glassy, so hopefully he'll see Ryback's doctor and get that taken care of. He said he didn't want to be the guy to stick around for too long, which immediately made me think that he was referring to Ric Flair. Or Hulk Hogan. Or really any professional wrestler over the age of 50, if we're being honest with ourselves. He said he wasn't sure if he could still do it anymore. He had tears streaming down his face, and then he left. And I was hoping that Brock would run down to the ring here and break the other arm, but no such luck. You'll notice Hunter never used the word retirement, but it was meant to leave you with the impression that he might be done. Clearly, they're building to a rematch with Brock Lesnar, and the latest rumor is that the match is going to happen at WrestleMania, which... Survivor Series is obviously too soon for him to come back. I mean, after this speech, for him to come back in 2 months would be stupid. So Survivor Series is probably too soon. WrestleMania probably does make the most sense, but that's not the match I want to see. I don't think it's the match most people want to see for Lesnar next year. But it sure does look like that's the direction they're heading in. I just didn't think their match at SummerSlam was particularly good. Plus, if you're paying the dude all this money, and he's wrestling a very limited number of matches, why not spread the love and match him up with three or four different opponents instead of just John Cena and Triple H? I don't understand that. Sheamus and Randy Orton beat Dolph Ziggler and Alberto Del Rio. Dolph eats yet another bro kick. At this rate, it's going to just mean absolutely nothing when he finally cashes in and wins the title. You can say the same thing for Del Rio, although I don't think Del Rio was winning the title at Night of Champions, but it's absolutely ridiculous how many title shots this guy has had on pay-per-view this year. He fought Sheamus, Jericho, and Orton in a four-way for the title at Over the Limit in May, and he lost. He was supposed to face Sheamus for the title at No Way Out in June, but then he suffered a concussion, and they replaced him with Ziggler. He fought Sheamus at Money in the Bank in July, and he lost. He fought Sheamus again at SummerSlam last month, and he lost. Granted, under dubious circumstances, but he still lost fairly to Sheamus plenty of other times. Now, of course, he's got himself yet another title shot at Night of Champions. I mean, is there no one else to plug into the world title picture on that brand? If you just keep feeding him title shots, if he does win at some point, what does it really mean? It's like years ago, I think Batista got more world title shots than anyone in the history of the frickin' planet, just one after another, and he would eventually win the title, and it's like, so what? It renders the title completely meaningless. At least last year, when we had all those matches with Christian and Randy Orton, Christian did end up winning the title, only to lose it back to Orton. I mean, it was still ridiculous how many times Christian lost to Orton. It was almost comical after a while, but he did win the title at Money in the Bank, and then he lost it back to Orton at SummerSlam. Plus, they were having awesome matches. Week in and week out, I mean, Christian and Orton was the best rivalry, the best feud of 2011, hands down. Sheamus and Del Rio, their matches don't do anything for me. Why has Cody Rhodes been demoted the way that he has been? Why not build him up for a title shot? They've got to get Sheamus a new opponent. Hell, program him with Daniel Bryan again. They've had some fantastic matches this year. Their 2 out of 3 falls match at Extreme Rules is going to be in the running for match of the year at the end of 2012. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing that at all. I mean, I like the comedy that Daniel Bryan is doing now, but, you know, I don't want him to just be a comedy figure. Let's get him in the ring with somebody. And personally, I'd much rather see him and Sheamus than Del Rio and Sheamus at this point. Backstage, we see Jerry Lawler and John Cena having a conversation in a shower. I don't want to know. I don't even want to know. Cena is about 15 or 20 years too old for the King, though, I will say that. So Lawler told him not to interfere in his match tonight, so you just knew he was going to get killed. Then Kane came out to do commentary for the Zack Ryder versus David Otunga match. Well, he didn't really say anything. He just kind of sat there. Still a vast improvement from Jerry Lawler's recent commentary, so I'd be okay with a Kane-Michael Cole announced team. And Zack Ryder actually won, believe it or not. Zack Ryder won a match, and with his finishing move, no less. And Kane came into the ring. He teased a chokeslam on Zack, but he ended up chokeslamming Drake instead. So I guess anger management is working for Kane. He's letting go of some of that hate that he's been embracing for the better part of the year. We had the main event. Shockingly, the steel cage stipulation won out over tables and no DQ. Punk told Lawler he would give him the first punch, and Lawler, after some stalling, finally decked him. Still one of the best right hands in wrestling. Then came Blade Gate. Appropriately absurd music for an absurd controversy. Jerry Lawler threw CM Punk into the cage a few minutes later, and Punk came up bleeding with a gash on top of his head. Obviously, blading is frowned upon in today's PG WWE. In fact, it's outright banned. Especially with 2 months to go in Linda's Senate race, you would think they'd be more mindful of stuff like this. So it's not like the company planned this or gave the okay for it, I wouldn't think. You know, on the Linda stuff, I don't care how many times they try to tell us she's been gone from WWE for years and they have nothing to do with her campaign. That may well be true, but they're on their best behavior right now, WWE is. So anyway, the hot topic this week has been, did CM Punk blade himself? Or was the cut accidental? Quite frankly, I could give a rat's ass one way or the other. I just like the fact that we got some blood in a cage match at all. Because I think it's dumb to have cage matches or Hell in a Cell matches without blood. That's just my opinion. I think it's stupid. So I think it added a little something to the match, but what do I think happened? I think he bladed. I know wrestlers don't normally cut themselves on top of their heads, which is precisely why I think he would have done it. So he could pass it off his hard way. Plus, you know, he shows up on Raw this week with a brand new haircut and a lot less hair on his head, which would make it easier for him to cut himself up there if he wanted to. And if you watch the match back, right before Lawler throws him into the cage, he reaches up by his head and appears to be holding something. Then when he falls down, Charles Robinson immediately comes over and appears to take something away from him. So, you know, people can waste their time debating this if they want to. He bladed. So what? What's the big deal? What's WWE going to do? Fire him? I saw on Twitter where Punk said he got fined $500,000 for it. And he paid Charles Robinson's fine as well. There were actually people tweeting me who thought WWE fined him $500,000. Just like John Laurinaitis fined Sheamus $500,000 for bro-kicking a referee, right? Give me a break. Anyway, Punk wins with the Anaconda Vice, makes Lawler tap out. Punk then grabs a microphone and locked himself inside the cage with Lawler. And he gives the King a chance to redeem himself by telling the fans that Punk is, in fact, the best in the world. Lawler says, hell no. So Punk begins to torture him. This brings out John Cena, who runs down to the ring. Who was it? I think it was Shane from Fort Lauderdale, one of our listeners, wrote in this week and wanted to know what I think looked more ridiculous. John Cena running to the ring or Santino power walking to the ring? And my response to him was, Santino is a comedy character who is supposed to look ridiculous. What's John Cena's excuse? So Cena runs down to make the save, but he soon realizes that the cage door is locked. And he's probably thinking to himself, how will I ever be able to get up and get into the cage and help the King? And if you're like me, you're probably just sitting there going, just climb over the top of the cage, you dummy. But this thought apparently never occurred to John Cena. He just stood helpless on the outside, yelling at Punk to stop being mean to Jerry Lawler. He finally realized that he should probably ask someone to raise the cage, which they did, and Punk bailed. This was actually a nice little old-school angle here, so I liked it, but watching Cena just stand there acting like there was nothing he could do was just so stupid, just so ridiculous. At least start climbing the cage and have Punk come over and knock him off. You know, it's the little things. Poor Jerry Lawler was left in a crumpled heap. All the fans that voted for that cage match stipulation have nobody to blame but themselves for what happened here, as far as I'm concerned. You are all responsible for sending Jerry Lawler to his doom in that cage match. It's all your fault. So that was Raw. Kane stole the show, as far as I'm concerned. Daniel Bryan wasn't too far behind, but Kane definitely had the best segment on this entire show. And with that, we move on to Impact Wrestling. Had another live show on Thursday night. Really enjoyed Impact this week. I really did. Lots of good wrestling with matches that, largely because of the Bound for Glory series, actually meant something. They felt important. This is a foreign concept in WWE these days, so it's actually refreshing to see something like that here. Samoa Joe beat AJ Styles to earn 7 points in the series, bringing him to 68 points total, second only to James Storm, who beat RVD to bring his total up to 73 points. Joe still has one match left in the Bound for Glory series against Jeff Hardy next week, so he could conceivably move ahead of James Storm into the number one spot with a win. Van Dam is going to battle Bully Ray next week, who is still with the company, at least for the time being. The same cannot be said for D-Von, who went on Twitter this week and thanked the TNA fans for 7 great years. He said that he can't wait to see where he ends up next and that he is not retiring. He made that very clear. He is not retiring. Of course, he is still the reigning television champion, having won the TNA TV title back in March. It's actually an embarrassing mistake for TNA in that you knew the guy's deal was expiring soon. This has been reported now for weeks that D-Von and Bully Ray's contracts were coming up for expiration. And, you know, you had a chance to take the title off of him more than once, including a match on pay-per-view. If I remember correctly, there was a match they added to one of the shows. Maybe it was Destination X. I don't remember. At the last minute between D-Von and Kazarian, and even then, they didn't do it. They didn't take the title off him. So now, I guess D-Von can walk out on Raw in a couple of weeks and drop the title in a trash can. And TNA would have nobody to blame but themselves. I don't really know what WWE would do with the guy, you know, if they were to sign him. It's not like they would push D-Von as anything special. I could see him being useful to them as a trainer or an agent behind the scenes, which is a role that Bully Ray has played with TNA now for a while, and he's very good at it by all accounts. Bully is an interesting case in that whatever is happening with him in TNA, he's not telling anybody. His contract is also about to expire, or maybe it already has. And nobody seems to know if he signed the new deal or not. He did post something on Twitter that teased possibly being done with the company after Bound for Glory in Phoenix. He did mention Phoenix, so maybe he's leaving also, but not until October. I don't know what's going on with him, but TNA would be foolish to let Bully Ray walk away. You know, maybe they let D-Von go so they could pay his money to Bully and give him a pay raise. He's the best heel in the entire company, one of the best talkers in all of TNA. He's in the best shape of his life. He's completely reinvented himself as a singles performer. But, you know, he's also 40 years old, which would probably be a strike against him in WWE. The biggest reason why I think going to WWE would be a mistake for Bully Ray is because there's absolutely no way that the Bully Ray character in its current form could survive in a modern-day PG WWE. It would either be a watered-down version of Bully Ray, or they would just put him and D-Von back together as a tag team, which would be a nice boost for the tag division in WWE. Absolutely. But there's way more value in Bully, I think, as a heel singles guy than as a tag team guy. I mean, outside of some matches that the Dudleys could have with the primetime players and Kofi and R-Truth, what the hell is there for them to do? I'm not sure I like that idea. There is something appealing about the idea of a John Cena-Bully Ray feud, though, I will say. But I just don't have any faith that they would allow the character to be the genuine Bully Ray that we have seen him be on Impact Wrestling. I just don't think it would happen. So anyway, that's the status of the Dudleys right now. The other Bound for Glory series match that we got this week was a Kurt Angle-Jeff Hardy main event, which was really, really good. I was actually shocked when Hardy pinned Angle after that second Swanton Bomb. I just figured that, you know, there was no way Angle would not be included in the Final Four, and Hardy had... I mean, Jeff Hardy's been feuding as recently as a few weeks ago with Robbie E, of all people, and losing to him. But nope, he pinned Angle clean, and when the match was over, Angle was just completely despondent and devastated. He simply could not believe that he lost. He sat in the ring for a few minutes, and then he left. They really put this match over like it meant something to Kurt Angle. Jeff Hardy now has 49 points in the Bound for Glory series, so I don't see a path for him to end up in the top spot. I think, if I understand this correctly, whoever ends up in the number one spot which will likely be either James Storm or Samoa Joe. I figure it has to be Storm. Whoever it is, they will get to choose their opponent in the semifinals at the No Surrender pay-per-view in 2 weeks. That's how I understand this. We also had the results of last week's gut check with Chris Louie. And I said on episode 234 that this would be judgment day for me with this gut check thing, because if they give this guy a contract, then the whole thing is just a farce. He may be a nice guy, he had a really touching background, but he did nothing to earn a TNA contract. He was probably the worst of the bunch thus far. So he came to the ring to confront the judges, Al Snow, Taz, and Bruce Pritchard. They showed his wife and kid at ringside, I guess for sympathy. This would not work. Taz voted no. Pritchard did his best Vince McMahon imitation by shouting the words, "gut check." I'm not gonna do what he did, because he looked like a fool. Anyway, not only did he vote no, thereby rendering Al Snow's opinion invalid, Pritchard took it one step further and actually told this Chris Louie fella that he should take up a different vocation, basically, is what he said. Find something else to do for a living. That was rough, but it was the right decision. After this, Joey Ryan popped up again in the front row, this time with a megaphone, talking about what a joke gut check is. He splashed a drink in Al Snow's face and ran away as Snow and Pritchard chased after him through the crowd. From the looks of it, Joey Ryan is going to end up being the first gut check contestant to actually get a match on Impact, and he actually lost the competition. So I don't think that speaks very strongly to this whole gut check thing, but anyway, the judges made the right call this week, and Chris Louie does not get a contract. The other big angle on the show involved World Heavyweight Champion Austin Aries challenging anyone from the Aces and Eights to a fight. He said that he wasn't medically cleared to wrestle, but that did not mean he couldn't fight, so I presume the lack of medical clearance is their way of not having Aries defend the title at No Surrender. Because really, who would he defend the title against? It makes no sense to have him challenge anyone in the BFG series. And Bobby Roode is not supposed to be getting a rematch, so why bother even having him defend the title on the next pay-per-view at all? Later on during the show, they had a backstage segment where Joseph Park Esquire finally returned to my television screen and confronted Hulk Hogan and Sting, who are now BFFs, apparently. Hogan and Sting, they don't go anywhere without each other now with the Aces and Eights around. And Mr. Park said that he would like to investigate Aces and Eights and try to get to the bottom of who they are and what they're doing here, and Hogan gave his blessing. And the first thing I thought when I saw this was that Joe Park must be involved in the Aces and Eights in some way. Whether he's their leader or their legal representative or whatever. My spidey senses were going crazy after this segment. I guess we'll find out in due time. Anyway, anything that gets this man more TV time is okay with me. Main event was Austin Aries coming out for a fight with Hogan, Sting, and half the TNA roster out there to watch his back. Aces and Eights eventually came out through the crowd. They sent their biggest, baddest dude to the ring to brawl with Aries. And after a few seconds, everyone came down. There was a big brawl that erupted in the Impact Zone. You can see Eric Bischoff's fingerprints all over this angle as it becomes more and more like the NWO, with one giant brawl closing out the show each week, just like Nitro back in the day. This time we saw some guy, I'm not sure if he came from the crowd or if he was working as a ringside staffer for TNA and was actually a mole. Whoever this dude was, he climbed up onto the apron and pulled his shirt up over his face to hide his identity because he wasn't wearing a mask, which was weird. And then he got in the ring, he struck Austin Aries in the head with what they called a slapjack. I know what a flapjack is, but I've never heard of a slapjack. It must be bad, though, because it knocked Aries the fuck out. Bully Ray then made the save, and Aces and Eights fled, and everyone looked very concerned about their champion laying on the mat. Apparently, the TNA staff wasn't all that concerned, since they never bothered sending a doctor down to the ring. And that was Impact. Again, it's Bully Ray, of all people, who makes the save, as Aces and Eights scatter to end the show. That has to have some sort of meaning. I mean, maybe Joe Park is involved, maybe he isn't, but I'll go with Bully Ray over Joe Park as having something to do with these attacks. Or maybe it's both. Maybe it's both Bully Ray and Joe Park. Although I guess that wouldn't really make any sense, but hey, anything's possible. I like that they have us guessing. That's the one plus about this angle that I do like. I'm still not a huge fan of the whole Aces and Eights thing, but it definitely has me thinking. So in that respect, I guess it's working. Let's get to shout-outs and questions here. Got some good ones this week. If you have questions or shout-outs of your own that you would like to possibly get on the air here on the show, you can email me. thesolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. John from Northern Ireland writes in. He says, I was just listening to Sound Off 233, and I heard you call me out for not writing in a while. It's ironic you should mention that, as I was about to request a shout-out for my 18th birthday coming up on September 3rd. A pretty bad time to have an 18th birthday, because that is the day I start back at my final year of secondary school. I'd just like to thank you for getting me through the endless hours of revision and boredom that I've had to endure thanks to my schoolwork for nearly 5 years now. I started listening to the podcast in December of 2007, so that would mean I've been listening to you for over a quarter of my entire life, and I greatly appreciate it. So that comes from John. Wow, quarter of his entire, that makes me feel old. But that's pretty cool. Chris Gaudet writes in, my birthday was on the 25th of August, and my girlfriend and I are celebrating our two-year anniversary next month. I also recently left a review in iTunes for the show, and he's hoping for a belated shout-out. So happy birthday, Chris, one of our longtime listeners, and I very much appreciate the feedback in iTunes. Emin Rogers writes in, wondering if I can get a quick shout-out for my 21st birthday on August 31st. Been a long-time listener, and the Sound Off is one of the things I look forward to every weekend. Fun fact, I am the Let Me Tell You Something fella guy that you hear in the outro of the show, as well as a professional wrestler myself here in Ireland, 6 months into my career, and I have 5 matches under my belt. I hope the Sound Off continues long into the future. You certainly have the gift of gab, my friend, so I appreciate that. That comes from Emin Rogers, and happy birthday to him. I guess he celebrated this birthday yesterday, so this is only a slightly belated shout-out. Let's get into some mailbag questions here. This one here comes from Brian. Brian writes in, Dear Solomonster, I saw an interview with Natalia where she said that she believes one day Owen Hart will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. I know Martha has said she has no wishes in even dealing with the WWE again. Do you believe it would be good for his legacy to be in there, like the rest of the Hart family, or is Martha right in not allowing it? Well, first of all, Owen's legacy, quote-unquote, in wrestling will not be harmed if he's never inducted into the Hall of Fame. He was a great wrestler who met a tragic end. Now, that said, I do believe he deserves to be honored if WWE so chooses, but it's a tough situation. You can say just because his wife doesn't want him to go in, we can put him in anyway. But I can understand her not wanting him to go in if the company is going to, in theory, be profiting from his death. Remember, the Hall of Fame at its core is just a gimmick to make money and sell DVDs. There is no physical Hall of Fame building. Maybe one day there will be, but right now it is in the mind of Vince McMahon. You know, they book it in big arenas like Madison Square Garden next year. They sell 15,000 tickets for it like it's some big event. And they market it as part of the annual WrestleMania DVD, which always does big business. If she really holds the company responsible for the death of her husband, I can understand her feeling uneasy about that. Now, I have not read Martha's book. She did a book many years ago called Broken Hearts. So I don't know what sort of comments she may or may not have made in there about all this. But I know that she hates wrestling. She absolutely wants nothing to do with it. I don't think she ever liked it, even when Owen was still alive. And wrestling. I'm sure it helped them make a nice life for themselves, but as best as I can tell, she would be very happy to never have anything to do with it ever again. So it's hard for me to imagine a scenario in which Owen is inducted anytime in the near future. It just has all the makings of a PR nightmare for WWE. The death of Owen Hart is not something they want to rehash again. Plus, they still have litigation ongoing between the two sides. Martha had filed suit against Vince and Linda McMahon a few years ago, claiming that they had been wrongfully using Owen's name and likeness on DVDs and withholding royalty payments that are due to Owen's estate and Owen's kids. And she also claims that family photos were used without her permission on the Hart Family DVD that WWE did a couple of years back. So there is still a great deal of acrimony, at least from her side, towards WWE. If I were Vince McMahon and I really wanted to induct Owen into the Hall of Fame, what I would do is have an intermediary, kind of like what they did recently, having Triple H be the one to call Bruno Sammartino about going into the Hall of Fame, since Bruno has no love lost with Vince McMahon himself. Have someone other than Vince reach out and broach the idea with Martha of honoring Owen and, you know, maybe setting something up where a portion of the profits from, you know, let's say the Hall of Fame ticket sales or something go directly to the Owen Hart Foundation that Martha set up back in, I think it was probably a year after Owen died. She set up this charity foundation. It's basically a charitable organization that she founded that provides college scholarships to kids and housing for low-income families. Do something where it's having a positive impact on others as opposed to just your own bottom line. I think that's the only prayer that you're going to have, and even still, I doubt she would go for it. You can induct him. You cannot induct him if his widow is that vehemently against it and is going to make a big stink about it in the media. You know, not that you can't do that with other wrestlers who don't want to be inducted. If WWE really wanted to put Bruno in, I've said this before, even though Bruno clearly doesn't want to be in the Hall of Fame, I would put him in. They have every right to honor any performer that has worked for them before if they see fit to do so. But I think Owen is the exception because of the circumstances involved. You know, there's never been another case in WWE where one of their performers died in the middle of the ring, especially the way that Owen did. Thankfully, this doesn't happen all the time. But, I mean, it would be suicide for the company, I think, to pursue this if she was that dead set against it. You just have to leave it alone and maybe revisit the idea sometime down the road. Terry writes into the show, Dear Solomonster, what is the situation with FCW, WWE's developmental territory? The last thing I've heard about them was they were planning on moving the territory to a new location. Would you mind shedding some light on the situation with developmental? Well, it's no longer FCW. That's the big news. They have rebranded FCW as NXT. NXT now is the name of the developmental territory system. Call it whatever you want to. The rumor I think that you're referring to, there was talk many months ago, probably before WrestleMania, that developmental would be shifting up to Stamford, Connecticut, to be closer to WWE headquarters. And that's the only thing that has not happened. There were a lot of rumors that there were big changes being planned and such, and they were moving out of, I guess it was either, was it Tampa that they were taping in before? I don't know where Full Sail is, but anyway, a lot of those changes did come about, but they still have not moved anything up to Stamford. Perhaps they'll open up an addition to the developmental system up in Stamford at some point. That's still being talked about. But the biggest change is that it's been rebranded. Everything now is NXT. Terry Taylor, who was with TNA for quite some time behind the scenes, is now officially working for WWE as part of the developmental system. There's been massive overhauls in terms of how it operates and the people who work there, and a lot of that has to do with Triple H. Triple H is taking a much more hands-on role with the developmental now. And we've heard before that new people being brought up to the main roster, he doesn't want people being brought up unless there's some sort of angle or long-term direction planned for them. So, you know, and I think if he sticks to his guns on that, I think that's a good thing. I think the odd debut every now and then where somebody kind of comes out of the crowd, let's say, and attacks an established superstar. You know, if Dean Ambrose showed up on Raw this week and attacked John Cena, which is not going to happen, but if it did, I think that would be a hell of a debut for Dean Ambrose. I don't think everybody needs vignettes and videos, but we see more of that, and I think that's a good thing. It harkens back to, you know, the 80s and you know, the mid-90s when we used to see more of that. Instead of having some guy with no name just kind of debut on TV one week and you know, people don't know who he is, they don't know the backstory behind him. Some people actually do benefit from having a character because maybe they're not all that charismatic. So we'll see, you know, over time if the changes Triple H is making and his philosophy is a good thing or not. I personally think it's going to be a good thing. We haven't seen that yet. Because they credited the signing of Sin Cara to Triple H, even though he really didn't have anything to do with that. And I think in a lot of ways, Sin Cara has been a bust so far in WWE. And, you know, Karma was a bust. That was also a signing that was credited to Triple H. So his track record so far in terms of signings is not good. I don't want to blame him for that, though, because signing Mystico to come to WWE was a hell of an idea. You know, he was the biggest star in Mexico for a good 5-6 years there. And Karma, I mean, for years, people were begging Awesome Kong, hoping that WWE would bring her in, and they finally did, and I'm happy they did. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out. You know, I guess the rumor is that they asked her to lose weight. She wasn't losing weight as fast as they liked, or they felt that she wasn't taking it seriously, and so they parted ways. I don't want to lay that at Triple H's feet, though. I like those signings, and hopefully they'll bring in more talent from the outside. Romeo Hughes writes in. He is a listener since episode 70 from Starkville, Mississippi. A solid monster. To get into the spirit of the new WWE 13 video game, I have gone back and started watching videos from the Attitude Era in 1998. I have two questions related to this. Number one, what did you think of the crazy character portrayed by Luna? Well, I thought that Luna was always crazy. When was she not crazy? Even when WWE brought her in 93, I thought she was batshit crazy. I don't remember a time on television where Luna Vachon was anything but crazy. Although I will say, in person, based on the stories I've heard, but my own personal encounter with her, I met Luna actually twice. The last time being in 98, as a matter of fact, I met her, and she was a sweetheart. I mean, Luna was really just a very nice lady, very nice person in the flesh when you actually met her. But on television, I don't remember her ever portraying a character that wasn't nuts. And the second question here, what was up with the big black mole on Undertaker's face? I remember the teardrop, which probably first appeared in 96 or 7, when I started seeing that teardrop on Undertaker's face. I don't know if that's the quote mole you're referring to. I thought that had some sort of prison connotation, like, you know, a teardrop on the face represented, you know, the fact that you had murdered somebody, which he did, I suppose. I mean, didn't Undertaker murder his parents? So maybe that's why... Maybe that's why he had the mole on his face. But if I'm wrong on that, then I have no idea. That's my guess, and I remember that being the story as far as the significance of the teardrop on his face. I think that's what it was in reference to. Last question here. This one comes from Johnny from London, UK. Despite having been a fan of WWE for years and years, through thick and thin, I've become so disillusioned and disgusted by the product recently that I'm considering giving up watching altogether. I think that the quality has declined of late to the lowest I can recall, with boring angles and poorly constructed feuds, and the move to 3 hours of Raw has been almost insulting. My question is this. Have you ever considered abandoning the wrestling world, and more importantly, what do you think it would take for you to do so? A bit of counseling would be helpful. And he does say in the email here, even if I do make the leap, I will carry on listening to the Sound Off. And I have gotten letters like this from a lot of people who say either they've stopped watching wrestling or they're thinking about it, but don't worry, I'm going to keep listening to your show. And they use this podcast as a way to kind of keep informed about what's going on the TV shows and all the top stories. And I just find it fascinating how many people over probably the last year, more so, have written to me saying this. So Johnny is not the only one. But, you know, to answer your question, have I thought about abandoning the wrestling world before? Sure. I came real close in early 1995. Back then, I was watching strictly WWF at the time, as far as, you know, here in this country anyway. I mean, every now and then, I would actually watch some Lucha Libre on one of the other channels, and I found that more, you know, entertaining in a funny way. But I was always a WWF guy back then, and the WWF product in 1995 was just atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. And they had a lot of talented guys on their roster. Don't get me wrong. You know, you had Bret Hart. You had Shawn Michaels. You had the 1-2-3 Kid. Owen Hart, the British Bulldog. There were talented guys on the roster. Hakushi. Even the Pirate. You know, Jean-Pierre Lafitte. Very good wrestler, good athlete, all that stuff. But the product overall, in terms of some of the characters, that was the same year that Vince McMahon must have had a brain aneurysm, because he brought in The Goon, he brought in Duke the Dumpster Drozzi, the Garbage Man, he brought in T.L. Hopper with his plunger Old Betsy, and Alex the Pug Porto, and although his gimmick was just he was an amateur wrestler, but watching paint dry was more exciting than watching Alex Porto. But 95, not a good year for WWF, and I, around February of that year, came very, very close. But I would say this, before you give up, try this, okay? Record Raw on DVR, if you have DVR, and just fast-forward through the garbage, because Raw is not all bad. I disagree with you, by the way. I don't think this is the worst of WWE. It may not be the best either, but we've seen far worse, I think, than what we're getting now, especially with the Punk heel turn, and it's kind of refreshing to see an old-school heel on TV and whatnot. And even the Daniel Bryan comedy stuff, while I wish he would be more prominently featured in a real feud, it's entertaining. So I would disagree on that, but there's some good stuff on Raw. Fast forward through the garbage and watch the good stuff. You may find it a lot easier to tolerate the show by speeding through it in an hour or so and ignoring the trash. And better yet, give TNA a try. You know, you're talking about abandoning the wrestling world, not just WWE, but give TNA a try. I never thought I would say that. If you would have said that to me 2 years ago, I would have called you crazy, but their product has been much improved of late, and it's better to sample some other wrestling before giving up on it altogether. So that would be my advice to you. And anybody else, quite frankly, who feels the same way and is thinking about just saying, you know, fuck it, I'm not going to bother with this anymore, before you do that, give TNA a try. Because there is other wrestling out there, and it's not all bad. If you have questions or a shout-out you'd like to hear on the air, email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. That is the email address for any and all things Sound Off. And, hey, we have an official Solomonster Sounds Off group on Facebook. Did you know that? Well, now you do. Search for it and apply to become a member. Just type in Solomonster Sounds Off in Facebook. That's the name of the group. Click for membership, and I can approve you. We've got a good group of guys in there. And so get going on that. Of course, you can friend me on Facebook as well, the official Solomonster Sounds Off profile page. You can just go to facebook.com/thesolomonster. That's the shortcut. That'll take you right there. Send me a friend request, and I will approve you so you can participate in our weekly Raw thread, the occasional Facebook mailbags that we do on there, all that good stuff. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. We'll be closing in soon enough on 1,600 followers, so help me get there. And thank you to all the new followers we've picked up recently. I appreciate it. And, of course, you can subscribe to this very show in iTunes. Just type in Solomonster Sounds Off. You will see the logo for the show. Subscribe, and whenever a new episode is posted, it will automatically be downloaded for you. It doesn't cost you a thing. And while you are there in iTunes, please leave a review for the show. I thank you for that. So that's going to do it for this week's show. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. I know we've gotten some new listeners recently as well. I hope you like what you're listening to. And we'll be back next weekend after the holiday here with episode 236. So again, enjoy the Labor Day holiday for those of you that will have a day off here in the U.S., which hopefully is most of you. And we'll be back here next week. Until then, be well, stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.